7:05, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Please stand for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Crunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Salomon?
Here.
Quorum present?
Thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda, the purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any members of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. Item A, approval of October 23rd city commission regular meeting minutes presented. Item B, approval of the November 1st city commission special meeting minutes as presented. Item C, approval to authorize the purchase of a new ISCO composite sampler in the amount of $5,739 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. Item D, approval of the purchase of 10 72-inch round tables, including a storage cabinet receiving insulation and trash removal from Interface Interiors in the amount of $6,262.50 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. Item E, approval of proposed resolutions regarding MDOT's local pavement management program and authorize the city manager and city clerk and treasurer to submit them if necessary. And item F, approval of the requested Metro Act right-of-way permission extension and authorize the city manager to submit it as needed. Is there anyone in the audience or commissioners that have any questions on these items?
I'd make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Moving on to your experienced citizen comments that are non-agenda items. Please state your name.
Michael Sheehan. I'm with the anyways, it's just a little bit of news. We're really happy. The trail, one down the trailway, received its last major grant yesterday from the Charleroi County Community Foundation, and that fills our budget. We're ready to go to construction, and I just thought we'd share that because it's a big day in my life. When you get a $2 million project to work on, it's nice when you get the last bit of change in the bank. So we're on our way.
Can you expand this to tell us from when, from where to where and the timeline?
Oh, sure. The trail will start here in Boyne City, just out here at the airport administration building, and will proceed more or less along the trail of the abandoned rail right away, all the way through until it goes beyond the Boyne Falls School, crosses, follows the trail into Boyne Mountain, crosses through the Boyne Mountain property, goes around the airport, comes up across the 131 at Cherry Hill Road, and goes into Boyne Falls. So that'll connect Boyne City to Boyne Falls and all the mountain property included.
And it'll start, hopefully,
in May.
Got it.
We hope to have the contracts let by March, and construction started in May and finished by next fall. This time of year, we'll be able to ride, walk, ski, skate, rollerblade, any way you want on a nice asphalt trail all the way from here to Boyne Mountain to Boyne Falls. Any more questions?
This funding is for the entire trail?
Pardon me?
This round of funding you have now will complete the entire trail?
Yes. Barring that the contractors come in at a price.
Thank you, Mike, for being the chief cheerleader for that project. I know it's been 10 years in the making, so we appreciate your efforts. Any other citizen comments? Yes, Ashley.
Ashley Cousins with the Boyne Area Chamber. I just wanted to give the City Commission a quick update because you had voted or proclaimed in October that National Manufacturing Day would be happening next October on the first Friday of October. quick update on how those events went this year. We did it in November, and they all happened last week. So we had about, in Boyne City, three companies participated, and we had almost 200 students between the 8th grade and 12th grade of Boyne City schools and Boyne Falls schools go through those companies. It was an excellent couple of days. Not sure if anyone took advantage of the public tours, but we'll publicize that more for next year. But the students had an excellent experience, have a lot more energy and enthusiasm around manufacturing, which was one of our goals. And it was just overall a really great day. So I appreciate you guys getting on board with that for next year. It'll be in October. And then around the region, also, there were events in Charlevoix, Petoskey, Boyne City, obviously, in East Jordan. And there was some news coverage. And I think all told, we'll have almost 540 kids through manufacturing companies in our whole area. So I just wanted to give you that little update.
Thank you, Ashley. I heard nothing but good things, so
awesome.
That's great. Any other comments? Moving on to correspondence, we have the 2017 State Water Fluoridation Quality Award from Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. Do you want to expand on that, Mike?
I'd let Mark do that.
Okay.
Letters addressed to me, Mark.
Sent out a letter in the certificate saying that we had we're having consistent level of fluoride in the water throughout the year.
Thank you. Moving on to city manager's report, Mike.
Yes. Excuse me, because I have a piece of correspondence, but I'll mention it in my name. Since our last meeting, I held interviews with two other representatives from other communities for our Director of Public Works position with five candidates. I'm anticipating that a candidate will be brought forward to the City Commission for confirmation next month. It's also anticipated that the follow-up on the goals will be brought back to before the City Commission at our December 11th meeting. Our schedules did not allow the subcommittee to meet as we had earlier hoped. Boyne City, like many parts of the country, had an excellent turnout, mainly right up here, for last Tuesday's November 6th election. 1,870 voters cast their ballots locally. That's 68% of our registered voters, and that included 565 who voted by absentee ballot. Despite the higher than usual numbers for a midterm election, everything here went very smoothly, and this will be more room, and the staff handled it with aplomb. On Friday, November 9th, also in this room, we had a very special day in Boyne City's history as we held the closing and finalized the purchase of the Boyne City Open Space property on Lake Charlevoix, just up the road here at 475 North Lake Street across from the Family Fair. That's about 4.7 acres of property, a little over 600 foot of Lake Charlevoix frontage. That will be a permanent open space and park for the entire community and the public to enjoy going forward. There were a lot of people that were involved in the process. It's about a $3.25 million piece of property that was acquired by two gentlemen in our community who wanted to make sure that it became public property forever. We were able to secure a grant of over $2.4 million from the Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund to acquire that property, and the city's, in addition to the Charlevoix County Community Foundation, which is providing $10,000, the city of Boyne City is providing over $800,000 out of our general fund balances for the rest of that. So we've acquired that piece of property with no additional taxes on the citizens of Boyne City, and it'll be permanent parkland for us to enjoy forever. So congratulations to all involved on that. Our fall leaf collection program ended this Monday for the season, and if you looked outside, you know that was just in time. Work on the West Michigan and Woodland water main installation project continues. The three fire hydrants have been installed. The new main is connected to the rest of our water system, and so far 19 of the total 26 service connection shutoff valves have been installed and connected to the main. Matt's, our contractor, is about a month behind schedule and is hoping to complete their installations this week. We'll see if that happens. The weather is certainly not going to make it any easier for them. At this point, unless we have some strange change and we don't have winter going forward, it appears that the final cleanups will need to wait until spring. And that will be some road patching that will need to be done, seeding, things of that nature. But the line should be active well before then. The contractor performing the video inspections of portions of our sanitary and storm sewer main systems are planning to have their survey work completed in town by Sunday, December 9th. They are nearly done inspecting the sanitary sewer mains and are beginning work on the storm sewers. These efforts were part of a SAW grant project that basically pays 90% of the cost of this, while we have to pay the other 10%. I have the right picture here. Isn't that beautiful? That is our new fuel tank. The new fuel tank that is for our new emergency generator. At least it will be at this location for our north water system well field. So basically, where we have our water wells at the north end of town, we will now have an emergency generator, which will be in that wellhouse building next to the pump, or to the tank, that arrived and was set in place today. Electrical contractors are scheduled to arrive and work on the interconnect later this week, and we hope to have that system fully operational yet this winter. The commission may recall that the generator that's being used for it was the one that was here for the old city hall and DPW buildings. Basically saved that generator and are repurposing it up there so that when we have a power outage, our water system will automatically come online and not be interrupted. So we're real anxious to get that done to provide some additional resiliency for our system. We've been contacted by a contractor who's looking to demolish the old Roberts Restaurant building across the street in the near future. We've heard that they might like to do it as early as this week. I doubt that's going to take place, but they are looking to do it fairly soon. We have not received any plans for a new building yet, so we'll keep you posted on that. Just in time for the winter weather, the Earlier Than the Bird annual event will be taking place this Saturday from 7 to 11 a.m. And then it'll be followed a little bit later, after Thanksgiving, by the Holiday Open House and Santa Parade, which is on Friday, November 23rd. The open house runs from 5 to 9, and the parade with Santa at 6. The winter 2019 city newsletter, which will be included in the winter tax bill mailing that goes out for delivery on December 1st, has just arrived, and copies were provided to the city commission for their review, and there's more available for the public if they don't want to wait to get it in their tax bills downstairs. And I hope everybody has a very enjoyable Thanksgiving, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have on these or other topics.
Mike, did you say you
have something?
Excuse me? You have something else you want
to ask? Correspondence?
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm not sure if all the commissioners got this at home. This came to the office here today. It's basically a save the date notice from the Michigan Municipal League with regards to their capital conference in March on the 19th and 20th. They do have sign-ups coming up where you can get earlier rates by saving about $75, and those start in January, as do rooms if we're interested in reserving rooms. So anyway, start giving that some thought, and if you let Cindy or I know if you're interested in participating this year down in Lansing, you can start making arrangements for it. Thanks.
Yes,
you? Mike, are you getting any idea of this visual inspection that they're doing on the system, what kind of shape it's in?
The general comment has been very good. On the sanitary sewer side, again, just starting to get started with the storm sewer system as well. We found some places that had some roots and things that are in there that needed to be cleaned out. So the cleaning process that goes along with the inspection process has been very helpful. Mark, any other insights?
There's just a couple areas. Some of the areas we got a lot of roots coming in. They're in joints, so we'll have to schedule or plan into our work plan how to replace some of those place joints where the roots are coming into the system, you know, because they can cut them, but the roots are just going to grow back. So we'll be planning on doing some additional work on those.
So nothing alarming.
Anything else?
me.
Okay. Well, this time, Mike, I'd like you to step down here. And just for the vote. Oh, I have this award for Mike. It's from the International City Management Association. 35 years of service.
Thank you.
At their 104th annual conference in Baltimore this September, the International City Management awarded their annual service awards. They issue service awards to individuals for 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45 years of professional local government management service. This year, one of our own, City Manager Michael Kane, was recognized by and among his peers in the profession for achieving this milestone. Today, it is my honor to present on behalf of the ICM a small token of recognition for those many years of government service. Next month, Mike will mark his 16th year of service with Boynton City. He has served in Boynton City the longest of any community he has served. It has been a good relationship, and we hope that it will continue for some time to come. Because Mike has chosen to participate in a professional organization such as the ICMA, that incorporates training, education, network, and so on and so forth, Boynton City is a winner. So, congratulations, Mike.
Thank you, Tom.
And this is Joe's fifth audit with the city this year. So Joe's here to present the fiscal year 2018 financial statement.
Good evening. I'd like to thank the commission for allowing us to be able to serve as your audit firm. It is a pleasure working with the staff at the city. They do a wonderful job providing us with the information that we need to conduct the audit. And before I get into the audit report, there is one item I wanted to point out. On page 7 of the audit, there is a certificate of excellence for financial reporting, that was awarded to the city by the Government Finance Officers Association. This is a certificate that 65 local units of government in the state of Michigan receive. It's about, well, it's a little bit less than 4%. So it means that the city went above and beyond in preparing its comprehensive financial annual report. And that in addition to having its financial statements audited, there's also an introductory section as well as a statistical section. An awful lot of effort goes into this for various departments, and it really sets the city aside, and it shows the diligence that it exercises in putting together its financial statements. And it is recognized by a third party as being of the highest quality. Moving through the audit report, starting on page 12, we get to the most important paragraph in the audit report. And this is where we provide the opinion on the financial statements. So three paragraphs down, we state that, in our opinion, the financial statements present fairly, in all material respects, the financial condition of the city as of April 30, 2018. It's referred to as an unmodified opinion, or more commonly thought of as a clean opinion. Highest level of opinion that we can provide on the financial statements, and what that means is all the revenues and expenditures and assets and liabilities have been verified as accurate in all material respects. And that led to the clean opinion. It should always be the city's goal to have the clean opinion, but it does mean something to achieve it. We have had some larger organizations with either qualified or adverse opinions. So basically, the controls that are in place are effective, and allowing the city to produce accurate and timely financial statements. Next, starting on page 15, we get into the management discussion and analysis section on the audit report. And I would think of this as just being a cliff note version of the entire audit. It's 12 pages of financial highlights, comparative financial data, so you can see what the numbers look like compared to the prior year, to give a little bit more historical context as to what those numbers mean. It also explains some of the significant reasons for changes in assets and liabilities and revenues and expenses for the past 2 years. And it further defines what all these different financial statements mean, the different measurement focuses, long-term versus short-term, things of that nature. So real quickly, on page 15, the financial highlights show that the city had $25.5 million of net position. So if we take all the infrastructure of the city and subtract out the long-term liabilities, there's about $25.5 million left over. Of that amount, when we narrow it down to the unassigned fund balance in the general fund, so not all of the $25 million can be spent. Some inside up, obviously, in streets and buildings and things of that nature. When we back off those illiquid and restricted items, we get to $2,228,565 of unassigned fund balance in the city's general fund. You can see that in the third bullet point down. If you look at that number compared to the annual budget and transfers out of the city, that's about 54.3%. In other words, there's in the city's reserves, there's about 6 months worth of resources that have been set aside from the day-to-day cost of running the city, utilities, wages, things of that nature. Government Finance Officers Association likes to see that number north of 17%, which is 2 months of operating reserves. Again, they're at 6 months. So very stable financial condition as of April 30, 2018. Next, if you turn to page 20, just a couple quick things I wanted to point out here. These are revenues and expenses of the city during 2018 and 2017. First, we can see that five rows down, the property tax increased from $3.3 million in 2017, that's the very last column, up to $3.6 million in 2018. So about a $300,000 increase. That has to do with rising taxable values in the city, which is a good sign for several years. If we turn back the clock about 10 years, there were declining taxable values in recent years. That those numbers have started to recover and rebound, and we're starting to see some increases, significant increases for the city that are driving up those taxable tax revenues. And three rows up from the bottom, you can see the change in net position. I would think of that as being net income for the year. In 2017, the city had a $758,000 increase in its net position. That number was $1.67 million in 2018. So back-to-back years that the city is showing an increase in its net position. So positive signs that we look for when reviewing financial statements for our clients. On page 30, we get into the balance sheet. This is on the modified accrual or the cash basis of accounting. And this shows that the general fund, again, has $2.2 million of unassigned fund balance. And it also shows that all of the other governmental funds in the city have positive fund balances. So the ambulance fund, the city facility fund, those are both considered major funds. Those have positive balances. And all the other funds get grouped together. The considered non-major funds get reported in one column. All of those funds have positive fund balances. So no deficits. A lot of our local units have one or two funds that might slip into a deficit balance. But you guys, not only is the general fund in stable condition, all the governmental funds are showing stable fund balances at April 30, 2018. Page 32 shows revenues and expenditures on the modified accrual or the cash basis of accounting. And this simply shows that the general fund had a $36,000 decrease in its fund balance during 2018. That primarily relates to a $1.1 million transfer out during the year for various street projects. Was the single biggest reason for that. It also shows that the city facilities construction fund had a decrease in fund balance of about $2.5 million. That is entirely attributable to $2.5 million that was spent to complete the building projects. So those were some unspent bond proceeds that were left over at April 30, 2017 that were spent down and recognized as an expenditure during 2018. If you turn now to page 60, just a couple more pages I wanted to point out. Page 60 shows the decrease in the city's net pension liability. This is now the third year. April 30, 2018 was the third year that the city reported the net pension liability. These are the new pension reporting standards, or I should say newer, at least. At the beginning of the year, the city had a $2.4 million net pension liability. And you can see various increases and decreases in that net pension liability. The biggest change was net investment income. So during 2017, there was strong investment performance. That decreased the net pension liability by $350,279 during the year, down to the reported balance of $2,033,393. The next schedule shows that over the next 22 years, as the city continues to pay in its net pension liability to the MERS trust, if the market earns a rate of return on all the assets that the city has already put into that trust, $2,033,000 will need to be paid in over 22 years. If the market earns a rate of return of 9% on all the assets that have already been set aside with MERS, that number decreases by about $800,000 to $1,248,000 over 22 years. Conversely, if the market only earns 7% rate of return over the next 22 years on those assets, the city needs to pay about $900,000 more, or $2.95 million. So the idea here is just to show readers how much the market performance can swing cash flows of the city over the next 22 years as it continues to fund its net pension liability. And if you turn now to page 70, we get a three-year schedule showing the changes in the net pension liability. And really, the one thing that I wanted to point out here is the trend. Back in 2015, when the actuaries crunched the numbers, they were showing that the city had a net pension liability of $3.37 million and that the city was 64% funded. In other words, what the total pension liability was, the city had set aside 64% of that liability into the MERS trust. That number increased to 73% funded in 2016. You can see that three rows up from the bottom. And then as of December 31st, 2017, the city was at 77.8% funded, which is far better off than most of our local units. Treasury requires local units to be at least at 60% funded. You guys are at 78%, 18 points better than what Treasury expects. So not only is the fund balance good, not only is the net position good, your net pension liability is being very adequately funded. And certainly on a schedule compared to most local units of government in the state of Michigan. The last thing I wanted to point out is two pages later, page 72. This is the retiree health care, or the other post-employment obligation that the city is reporting as of April 30, 2018. So the total liability is $491,536 as of April 30, 2018. It's only included in this footnote disclosure, or in the employee supplemental schedule. So this number does not show up, $491,000 does not show up in the basic financial statements. Next year it will, and that's a result of Governmental Accounting Standard Board Statement Number 75, which is going to require this number to, in addition to being reported in these back end schedules, it's going to require it to be included on the Statement of Net Position to bring a little bit more transparency to it to the reader, so that the readers better understand what all of the liabilities of the city are. So that number is about $400,000 more than what is currently being reported as an OPEB obligation. Right now, the OPEB obligation is $97,536. The number is going to increase approximately $400,000 next year as a result of that new reporting standard. So I just wanted to point out to the commissioners that there will be a new reporting standard, there will be a significant new liability that's reported next year as a result of Governmental Accounting Standard Board Statement Number 75. And I get ready to answer any questions that the commission might have.
Anyone?
Just a comment. I'll repeat what I said in our session where we were all meeting that last year's a new person, and as I read this, couldn't make any sense of it whatsoever. And thanks to your help, I was able to understand not only the importance of the audit, but also how to make it a readable document. Again, I wouldn't say fascinating, but certainly readable. But, and did point out, help me understand, that indeed that certainly from a modest perspective, we're in sound fiscal shape and our practices are meet and not exceed standards for municipalities in Michigan, which sure. I thought was is important for us to not only know, but for our residents to understand as well.
I would state that a big thank you goes to Cindy and her team. It's
Miss Michelle
it's
back
pretty,
there.
It's pretty classy when we get an award from the state that we're in the top 4% of doing things the right way. We thank you.
Do you want to introduce Michelle? Hmm? You should introduce Michelle.
I want to introduce Michelle. Michelle Hewitt is our deputy treasurer, and she's a huge, just a big part of this process every day. And I'm very grateful to have Michelle on our team.
Job well done. Anything else? Yes, Mike?
Just to let people know that the whole audit is about 111 pages. One of the things that we're working to do is to try to make a Cliff Notes version of it that was discussed to make sure that we can get it down to a page or two. We're going to look at some other communities' ideas on how they've done that, see if we can do that as well, too. But if anybody's interested, there are copies of the audit that are available here for people to review. It will be online shortly. The state of Michigan will be having it as well, too. And there's also a copy that will be available at the library, where we also have our budget books as well, too, for people to review. I think the report that we've just heard will make it a little bit easier and gives us a good starting point for accomplishing one of the city's goals, which is be excellent stewards of taxpayer funds. As I think we've got a great starting point as we work to develop tools and processes that allocate city funds efficiently and better forecast our financial needs and challenges. So I think we're at a good place and looking to go even better. So. If anybody has any questions, if they want to review this document, let Cindy or I know with regards to it, and we'll do our best to answer the questions.
For our guest students, book report due next week. So, thank you. We appreciate it.
Sure. I'll tell them.
Okay. Right when we hit the road. Safe travels.
Yes, we'll do.
Moving on to the Housing Commission update.
Hi, Jane McKenzie with the Glen City Housing Commission, Executive Director. And we are looking at going through the RAD process. And what I have up there is actually some information that we shared with our residents back in June when we made an application to do this. So keep scrolling. It's in Word format, so it's not PowerPoint. But anyway, so just to remind you, the Boyne City Housing Commission has Litzenberger Place with 53 one-bedroom apartments for seniors and disabled, and then 26 scattered site houses that are scattered throughout Boyne City, two- and three-bedroom houses. And this RAD process would affect all of the properties. So when they were built, and you can scroll to the next screen. HUD gave us money to build all the buildings, and then they also gave us annual operating funds. In exchange for this free money, and the money they gave us to build the buildings, they didn't put any repayment terms on it or any interest on it. It was like a grant. It was free money. But in exchange for that, we entered into an ACC contract that said we're going to rent these apartments to low and moderate income families, that we cannot sell or mortgage our properties, and entered into a deed of trust on all the properties, which puts everybody on notice that these can't be sold and we can't get mortgages on these properties. So in addition to give us the money to build the apartments and to an annual operating fund, they also give us annual money for capital improvements. So to do things like roofs and parking lots and heating systems. We put in a new sidewalk this year. However, over the past 20 years, so these two things are actually line items in the federal budget. So that does not go smoothly every year. The amount of money that we get kind of fluctuates depending on how the budget progresses through politics. And also, the timing of the money is unreliable, too. So this has led to a backlog nationally in capital improvements. The money for capital improvements has reduced by 35% over 20 years. So now there's a backlog of about $26 billion in all the public housing authorities across the U.S. So HUD is looking for solutions of how to fix that, and they come up with this RAD program, or Rental Assistance Demonstration Project. Through this process, they removed the deed of trust from the property so that public housing authorities can go out and get mortgages. We can apply for low-income housing tax credits to rehab the properties. We can enter into partnerships, sell them, we can transfer the subsidy to different apartments and totally demolish what we have. They really kind of opened up this whole broad spectrum of tools of what you can do through the RAD process. And through this process, we change from a being a public housing authority, the properties change from being a public housing authority to being on a Section 8 platform, which is consistent funding. Better, easier for us to budget. We know how much money we're going to have every year to be able to use for operations and for capital improvements. It went away. Okay.
You're on your own.
Thank you. I have my copy. So what we will enter into is a housing assistance payment contract, a HAP contract, which is kind of a standard Section 8 contract that says, for these apartments, you will receive this much money each year for the next 20 years, and that will also be renewed. So as far as the impact on the residents, they won't see any difference. They currently pay 30% of their adjusted income, which is the rent that they pay. Under a Section 8 platform, they pay the same thing, 30% of their adjusted income. We do enter into a new lease with them because it would be leasing from Boyne City Housing Commission. It would be a new entity that's created by the Boyne City Housing Commission. But we can't kick anybody out just as a result of changing the lease on them. That's something that HUD is very concerned about and keeps close track of. And if any resident does want to move after a year, they actually become first on our list for a housing choice voucher to be able to move out of Litzenberger Place or the 26 houses.
Jane, what page are you on back?
Oh, you are. I've kind of flipped way ahead.
Okay, I can go ahead.
So the steps for the RAD conversion. I'm down there. We have submitted an application, and the board has approved starting this process. And then HUD has reviewed the application and has given us a CHAP award, which is a commitment to enter into a housing assistance payment contract. So the next step is to submit our financing plan. This is where we tell them how do we want to do this. And our plan right now is to try to keep it simple. Keep the buildings as they are. We just want to switch from a public housing platform to a Section 8 platform. But there's quite a few due diligence steps that we need to go through to do this. We need to do another housing, an assessment of our housing to figure out what needs to be fixed over the next 20 years. They want to make sure that the funding we are going to get over the next 20 years is enough money to be able to repair everything that's in that plan. So between what we're going to get through the CHAP, then we'll also probably end up with some kind of a mortgage on our properties so that we do have the funds to do all of that. But then we'll also be able to apply for other grant funding to be able to accomplish the capital needs that we're going to have. But right now, it's still, we don't have the exact plan yet. We're working on hiring a consultant to help us through this process, make sure that we do check all the boxes, and make sure that we don't get to the end of the process and have some surprise, because this is our first and only time going through this process. So after we submit a financing plan, pledge would accept it, then the HAP contract is executed and conversion is complete. We do have the option at any time, this is the next note, of to withdraw our RAD application if we realize this isn't a good deal for us either financially or it's not really going to improve the condition of the property, so we're hoping it will. We can always back out of it, or if HUD thinks it's not good, they can back out of it too. And then the next steps is we're working on preparing the application, continuing to meet with residents, and just kind of keep moving forward step by step. From this point forward, it should take about a year to get to the end of the process where that we are officially no longer, Litzeburg is no longer funded through the public housing process, but through a Section 8 process, in the same way for the houses. And on here, the memo that was in your packet, I did a little diagram at the end of it that showed how the house, there still will be a housing commission at the end of this, because we still will have the Section 8 voucher program that we have, the Housing Choice Voucher Program, and all of the 79, 80 units that we have in Litzeburg and the houses are all now going to be Section 8 voucher units. So in addition to the 60 we have, we'll be doing some more vouchers, which will be our own properties. So we still need a public housing authority, the housing commission, in order to administer those programs. And staff would still be employees of the Boyne City Housing Commission. But just like how Deer Meadows contracts with the Boyne City Housing Commission for its management and maintenance, now Litzenberger would be contracting with the Boyne City Housing Commission for its management and maintenance. So that's how and so with the 26 scattered houses. That's what I know at this point, and as we move through the process, I'll keep you guys posted on what's going on.
Yes, Mike.
As I think many of the commissioners may know, the Boyne City Housing Commission was created by the City Commission of the City of Boyne City quite some time ago. Once it was created by the city, it basically became an independent body. As the feds and other folks will tell us, we don't have anything to do in the day-to-day operation of the Housing Commission. We just discussed that in our audit presentation. Notes from the Housing Commission's audit are reflected in our audit, but we don't have any control with the budget or the day-to-day operations of the Housing Commission or its properties. When Jane advised me of this change going forward, to me it appeared to be a significant enough change that I thought it was worthy of bringing to the Commission's attention in case we have any questions from people in the community as to what's going on. Basically, what Jane is outlining for us is a different model to hopefully accomplish the same results, maybe in a better way than we have for these decades that we've had the Housing Commission work on its projects and process. They will be transferring the ownership of some of these things with regards to the process, but again, the process that they're switching to is a government-approved process that they're encouraged to, or that's available for them to use to provide financial stability for our for the Housing Commission projects and for the residents that depend on them. So while this is new and different, and maybe a little bit of scary, I give kudos to the Housing Commission for exploring its options to make sure, especially in the times of decreasing federal revenues for housing developments, to make sure that our program and our residents that are living in these are protected going forward. So obviously they still have a lot of due diligence to do. This is a lot of information, but I thought it was important for the commission, and in some respects, the broader community to understand what's going on here. We're not part of the approval process of this. This does not require any city commission approval. So this is an informational item to you. But again, I think we all want to be on the same page and be informed with regards to what's going forward. So that's just a little background as to why we're even having this presentation here today.
Very good. Is there any comments from the public or the staff? Yes, Michelle?
Does it mean there will be more funding?
Not really.
It'll
just be more consistent, something so that we can budget better.
Commissioners, any questions?
So the Section 8 platform, could you describe that and how that would be different?
Section 8 is, the properties, for instance, we have housing choice vouchers right now, which is a Section 8 program. There are private landlords that we enter into contracts with. So first, I'm trying to figure out which way to start this. Somebody who needs an affordable apartment applies to the Boyne City Housing Commission. We issue them a voucher. They then go out in the community to find a place to rent from a private landlord. When they find that, we inspect the apartment, make sure it meets minimum quality standards, but then also make sure that it's not, the rent is something that's not too expensive. It fits within the program. Then a contract is entered into, a three-party contract between the Boyne City Housing Commission, the landlord, and the renter, that they're going to rent this unit, the rent's going to be for this dollar amount, and the renter pays 30% of their income for rent, and the Housing Commission pays the additional up to the contract rent for the apartment. So that's what Section 8 is. So what we get, the Boyne City Housing Commission gets, is every month money to pay that subsidy, a half funding, housing assistance payment fund to pay that, and then we also get a small administration fee for doing the paperwork. So how that would benefit us is we are going to know what the rent is going to be for each and every apartment that we have, whether it's a one-bedroom, two-bedroom, or three-bedroom. The amount of money that we get in rent each month will fluctuate, or from HUD will fluctuate, but we know what it's going to be because the rent is going to be $500 for an apartment. Just might be somebody's paying, a renter's paying $200 and HUD's paying $300, or vice versa, But we know it's going to be $500 a month. Right now, it just fluctuates based on knows what.
So how do you generate the revenue to make improvements?
So the rent is, they have looked at the amount of money that we get right now from the rent that our renters pay, from what they give us, actually what they gave us in 2016 in operating funds, and what they gave us in 2018 in capital funds, and kind of spread that across all of our apartments, which is really a higher amount than we're getting this year in operating funds and the highest amount we've gotten in capital funds over the last few years. So they've kind of beefed it up a little bit. And then every year, that's the amount we're going to get. Every year after that, we're going to get a cost of living increase, basically, in the rent, an OCAP increase. So that's the amount that we're going to get. And it's actually a little bit more than what we've been living on the last couple of years. So that difference is going to be what we can then go to the bank with to pay the mortgage.
Speaking of mortgages, is the Deer Meadows, is that mortgage been fixed up? Or is it?
No, there's still a mortgage on Deer Meadows.
How long does that have to run yet?
Well, we refinanced it recently, got a better interest rate, lower monthly payments, and it's a 10-year note.
So
being that we don't own the Deer Meadows, that's owned by private financing party or bank or however you were able to refinance with, but how does that affect this program? I mean, trying to transition to it.
Deer Meadows totally stands on its own. It's actually a private entity that stands on its own. It does not get money from HUD, and it's not involved in this RAD conversion at all. It's totally separate.
So there's enough income through the rentals to actually justify the cost for the mortgages?
Yes.
Okay. Are you setting aside a fund balance for improvements on Deer Meadows?
Yes. But again, that's too private.
Right.
But yeah, it has its own operating reserve and its own replacement reserve funds.
We've talked a lot in the community about housing availability. And it's not additional funding. Is there anything about this conversion to this new platform that provides at least better opportunities for seeking funding to help us address at least a piece of the housing puzzle, which is low in mind?
That's really why I want to get the consultant in. I had this first phone conversation with HUD, and they started talking about different things that other public housing authorities had done. And I was just like, just get HUD off my back. Let's keep it simple. But then she started coming up with some creative things that have been done with other housing authorities. Now, I don't know if we want to go down that road or not, but it would be good to have a consultant look at all of our properties. Because we have a scattered site, maybe it might make sense to sell some of those so that we do have an income to do something different. And that's something that we can do through this process. I hate to reduce our affordable housing inventory, but it helps us do more things, then maybe it would be better in the long run. So yeah, that's why, since we only have one shot at this, I'd like to get some outside advice on it.
All right.
Jane, do you have any timing with regards to securing a consultant to help you with this, or any insights on that?
Hopefully within the next 30 days we get some. So far just kind of got a list of names that we need to start talking to, but we have to go through the federal procurement process.
So 30 days.
And that's another good thing about the RAD thing. We're going to have a whole lot less red tape, because then it's no longer considered a federal property. So even though procurement is always a good idea, you don't have to meet the letter of a federal procurement process.
So 30 days to secure, or just start going out for bids for a consultant?
To secure, yeah.
Any idea of how long it would take for that consultant to help you through that process or come to a conclusion?
I know that we have to get back to HUD within 6 months with our financing plan. So.
There's usually no free lunch. Are there any downsides or pitfalls with regards to this process that you're looking at, or just?
It's more if the numbers don't work. If through this process, through the capital needs assessment, it says, "Wow, you really need a lot of work," but yet, and you're financing, you're only going to get this much money. Then we just continue as a public housing authority. Which is why we might need something creative to make it happen. That's why a lot of, or some public housing authorities haven't gone forward with it.
Yes.
Kind of on topic, but a little bit off, and tying with the housing solutions discussion that we've been having. I had a meeting with Jane, myself, and another owner and developer of affordable housing in our community to talk about possible partnerships going forward. And those people specifically asked for Jane, wearing the hat of Northern Homes, to be present at that because of her expertise and knowledge with regards to the different state and federal programs and exploring different options. And just during the course of our hour meeting or so, I think Jane hit on a couple possibilities that I think we're going to merit further exploring, that kind of lit up some of the other people's eyes, where we're looking at potential housing projects that could be done maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years out, that maybe they could be done a year out. at least at some initial scales. So the point I'm trying to make is we have a great asset in our community, both for Northern Homes and for the Housing Commission with Jane. I'm sure as they go through this process, if there are any pitfalls that say this isn't the right course for us, she'll advise the Housing Commission otherwise, and hopefully she'll keep us apprised as to how the process goes forward. So personally, kudos to you for exploring this option. I guess ultimately we'll see where it takes us.
This is the third round of RAD. They did a round of RAD. Congress only authorized like 10,000 apartments to go through RAD at first, and then they did a second round. So this is the third round. So we're not the guinea pigs. We're learning from what's happened before. So I think now is a good time to be going through the process too.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Jane.
You're welcome.
You go to good work. Let's move on to item C, city property update. So, Mike?
Yeah, I'll start off with it. At the November 1st Parks and Recreation Board meeting, we had representatives of the Top of Michigan Mountain Bike Association and the Wallen Lake Trust and Conservancy present to provide updates regarding trail and property initiatives involving the city's property in Evangeline Township and on another parcel adjacent to that. The program's director, Heather Husserfeld, of the Conservancy reported that they had just executed a purchase agreement with the owner of the property immediately east of this city's wooded 80 acres. They are looking to work with TAMA to purchase that property over the next several months. That property could be used to and connect the existing TAMA trail system on the Boyne City School System's property to a network of trails that TAMA would like to build on our wooded property. And we have additional maps that we've received that I'll be putting up on here in the screen for the commission and the public review. Also at the park board meeting, a representative from TAMA advised the park board that Evangeline Township plans to apply for a grant from the Charleroi County Park Recreation Village that they hoped could fund construction of a vehicle parking on city property adjacent and east of Old Fort Bay Road, and that you'll see where the proposed location for that is. Overall, my perception was that the Park and Recreation Board was receptive to these ideas and having them develop further. The idea of selling all or some of the city property to the Conservancy was also raised. The Conservancy noted that they could be interested in considering such a purchase, but they also noted that their resources were limited. There was no consensus on this matter but discussion amongst the board and other people present. The Conservancy also noted, tying to something that we've discussed here at the commission earlier, that they have an expert forester that helps them investigate properties to determine if sustainable timber harvesting operations are feasible. Heather indicated that they might be able to provide those services for the city's wooded property where the trails are being considered. The city had discussed this earlier, but had not pursued any further investigations into harvesting. And since we talked about it this spring or summer, the park board seemed to think that the Conservancy's offer was worth pursuing. Since the meeting with the park board took place, we've been advised that the Michigan Department of Natural Resources is receptive to and progress is being made in discussions with them on the possibility of creating additional trails on the state's property just north of the Boyne City Schools property. Designers of the trails for TAMBA have indicated to me that they feel that this network of interconnected trails would provide a variety of quality experiences for riders of different skill levels that would be very attractive to bringing riders to our area. At tonight's meeting, we expect to have representatives of TAMBA, and I see in the audience, Evangeline Township and the Conservancy present to update the commission on this matter and attempt to answer any questions the commission may have. I continue to believe that the possible development of trails and other recreation opportunities on this long dormant piece of city property, including the proposed parking lot to support them, is worth pursuing. I continue to support exploring the possibility of a sustainable harvesting on the site as well, although that is of secondary importance as far as I'm concerned. I believe that it is in the long-term best interest of the city to maintain ownership of this property at this time. As I mentioned at the Park and Recreation Board meeting, I believe that it's good for the community to have options, and owning that property gives us options, not only that we could consider now, but in the future as well. I also like to think that the cooperative nature of this possible trail project, as it is beginning to take shape. Having us work cooperatively with Evangeline Township, Tomba, the Conservancy, the Boyne City Public Schools, and the MDNR on something that could benefit our citizens, businesses, neighbors, and visitors is something that I see as a potential positive on so many levels. I also provided the City Commission in the agenda packet, and it's available also online, our June 12th meeting discussion minutes, and the motion that was made on this topic at that time. So it's my recommendation that the City Commission consider this matter and any further input that we may receive regarding it, and provide further direction to staff to continue to work with the appropriate parties to develop plans to, one, develop the trails and related facilities, and two, sustainably and selectively harvest timber on our 80-acre parcel in Evangeline Township, in that order of priority and overlapping if and where feasible. And obviously there's always lots of options that the commission can consider. So the map that I'm bringing up right now, and we'll have another map that gets into more details on the trail. Let me just shrink that just to down this. So you can see it. This is Walden Lake, this location here, a corner of that. That's a portion of the old Horton Bay Road. The city owns about, each of these blocks is about 40 acres there. We own two undevelopable pieces of property along the Horton Bay Road. These are the two lots that I'm referring to as the wooded lots, right here. The property that the Walden Lake Trust and Conservancy is working with Tomba to acquire is right here. The Boyne City School property is at this location here, where they have a series of trails already existing. And this is the DNR's property to the north of that. Tom is in discussions with about the possibility of creating trails on that as well. So again, we have an existing network of trails that are being fully used here. There is a potential to basically add, looks like about 120 acres here, and then some portion of the state properties up here as well too for additional trails. I'm going to switch to the other map here in just a second, and let answer any questions the commission has in the meantime. Yeah, this is the other trail. And this, the other map, the two areas shown in the green up here are the city's two 80-acre parcels, and the green lines are trails that Tom has outlined. This is one of our 40-acre parcels, 40 acres each. This is one of our 40 acres along Old Fort Bay Road. This is where they're proposing that a parking location be placed, and then people could access the trail system from this site as well, in addition to accessing it from the school site as well. The purple lines are on the property that are proposed trails that Tom is proposing to develop with the Conservancy on the property that they're looking to acquire. The red lines are existing trails that are already on the school property, and the yellow dots that are on there are locations where trails intersect. And I gave copies of this map to the commission, and just for information, everybody, On the existing school properties, there's about just under 8 miles of trails, 7.8. Those green squiggly lines on the city property, if they were all constructed, would be approximately 6 miles of trails. And the purple green lines would be on the conservancy property, assuming that that acquisition goes forward. We have been an additional 3 miles, and I don't recall the specific ones on the mileage count on the DNR property. That's my background review on it. Again, we have representatives of some of these organizations here to talk about it further. Commission's pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah, I was here from the town of Lake Angela and Township. Who wants to go first?
We also have the conservancy.
Very good.
I'll introduce myself to you all first because I'm probably a new face. I'm Heather Hostetler. I'm the director of conservation programs at the Wallen Lake Trust and Conservancy. The Wallen Lake Trust and Conservancy works in the Wallen Lake watershed, and so we're kind of plumped down in the middle of our great friend Little Traverse Conservancy service area. So we were under contract to purchase that 40 acres. It's actually 37 acres plus 3 acres that connects it to Erickson Road on the north side. So there's a small little parcel on the north side as well. This parcel creates obviously a natural partnership with Point City and Tomba and the schools. And so we're excited to be embarking upon it. So we're under contract to purchase it. We have a deadline of April 1st, and so we'll be working on a collaborative fundraising plan, public fundraising, and sort of parallel actions, working on this kind of broader collaborative, I think, partnership project of larger trail connections too with Tomba and you all.
Well, thank you, and welcome to...
we're excited to be a point.
Yeah, so I was able to walk the city property pretty extensively over the last couple months, and training the city property is really more like Avalanche, which is great for multi-use optimization. So basically, we can make the trail experience more fun for mountain bikers and other users, mainly by making downhills longer and stuff like that. But the collaboration between all the different entities would really help put Moyne on the map as far as a cycling destination. So if you look at larger nationally renowned areas like Marquette, Copper Harbor, Michigan, or like Bend, Oregon, they have these trail systems that appeal to all different levels of riders, which this would help accomplish, particularly with the DNR property on the north side. So at this proposed trail map with the DNR property that's not on there, there'd be about 20 miles of single track. So just for comparison, in Copper Harbor, there's 30 miles of single track, and people travel from all over the world to ride. In Copper Harbor, the trails there are very high quality, which is what we intend to do here as well. So going on the economic tourism side of it, when I spoke to you in the spring, I mentioned the Glacial Hill study. With the new trails that are proposed here, people that don't live in the county coming here to ride with all of the mileage of the proposed trails, that's about $500,000 in economic tourism dollars annually. And that's just with what we have there. But it's looking like a great project, and it could be a very awesome trail system.
Is Tomba going to undertake this locally to construct?
There's talk about having part of it being a volunteer built and then also a professional built. So similar to how Avalanche being a professional did. All of the school forest trails so far, that's been volunteer.
We're hoping to build a fundraising campaign that includes both the purchase of the property and at least a jump start for some professional build or you know, some jump start funding as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Michelle Courtright, representing Evangeline Township. For those who don't know, the tagline for Evangeline Township is Lakes, Parks, Trails. So we're really excited about this. Really excited about this. Of course, this will be a boon for Boyne. Our trails are going to be better than the trails at Glacial. The idea is to provide a higher level of riding experience that we don't have here yet. People go to Marquette, Copper, Harbor, like Michael was saying, to get to these higher levels of riding, which we would have on the city-owned 80 if that's developed for trails. So I think about people driving up the highway up to Marquette, they could just come here instead of going all the way to the UP and get that experience. The trails, this trail area here is part of the Evangeline Township Rec Plan, so, you know, we'll be, you know, focusing on that in the future. As you know, we did the signage for the school forest trail, so we would be assisting with signage for the new trails. Just tonight, we had a meeting. We talked about applying for a rec grant for the road in on the old Landco property in the parking lot, and we learned that that would have to be a city application for, you know, the rec grant if you choose to. But we did a motion, which we passed in full support, if we could do a hybrid, half and half, we'll just see what would be allowed by the county rec dollars. So anyway, at some point, if you wish, we can talk about any collaboration there. And we're excited because this meets environmental, recreation, business development, and destination goals. But the thing we're most excited about is the ultimate collaboration. We're thinking this could be a model for collaboration. We're even talking about writing an article for the MTA News if this comes to pass. As Mike said, we have the state of Michigan with the DNR. We have our public schools with the school forest trail. We have the city. We have the conservancy. And we have the township. What is that? Five different entities collaborating on a project if this all comes to pass. So anyway, the entity where these trails are located are really excited about the potential for our community.
Thank you.
Action of the Parks and Recreation Commission. As already quoted by our city manager, this was very carefully aired out at our last meeting, and we felt very strong in support of this. I just wanted you to know we're backing up if you want to go with this decision or there.
Thank you. Anyone else? So you are looking for a motion on this, so we'll go through board deliberation. You're looking for direction?
At least direction. At least, and again, a lot has happened since this matter was discussed by the commission back in June. There was some initial discussions about possibly getting a connection over the Purple Trail property to link the schools and this and our property potentially. I don't think, at least I didn't foresee that we'd be this far this quick with regards to it. The conservancy, I don't think, at least not in my mind frame, was an opportunity or a resource that we really counted on, and they've really stepped up to the plate and have come with, you know, lots of ammunition and resources to make this potential possible. One of the goals of the city and of our Main Street program is to try and make recreation work as an economic development tool for our community. There is the potential to do that here. There's no guarantees with regards to any of this, but as Michelle mentioned, whether it's strictly used for trails or a mixed use type of opportunities, having these mountain biking trails can open some doors for economic development that we don't have currently opened here. We've got a really good start with all the resources that are at the school property or at Avalanche. With regards to the road trails that Mr. Sheehan mentioned earlier, going to Charlevoix, tying into that system, and going to Boyne Valley Township, tying into those systems. Really, this does build on our desire and earlier efforts to really become a trail town community. So I think there's a lot of potential here. I think it's worth continuing to explore. Obviously, there's lots of I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed. The green squiggly lines that show up as the 6 or so miles of trails on the proposed on the city property, This is the first time I've seen him, was earlier today. So there's a lot of due diligence that still needs to be done. I really would like to see if there is a way to do any sustainable harvesting with regards to the wooded portion that works together. Harvesting is not necessarily a bad thing. I think you can look at what's going on in California as to one of the reasons why people should sustainably manage their forests, whether it's out on this property or an avalanche. I think there's some things to consider. So anyway, I think it's worth going forward. I'm bringing this, the commission, to continue the discussion we started in June and see where you want to go, if you want to get more information, or if you're ready to have us continue to work down, walk down this path with these folks.
Don, you want to start?
I certainly support this process, you know, moving forward in collaboration with the other parties. A couple questions. Home terms liability, this was a landfill at one time. Is there anything here that would cause a problem, I mean, as far as using the property?
We'd have to be very careful with regards to where that blue trail goes in there and any parking things. We have to work through the state to make sure that anything we do is in compliance with their closure requirements and properly done. The vast majority of the trails on the green section are on property that was never used for anything, as far as we can see, other than, you know, a little here and there, some casual dumping or maybe people hunting on it.
The other question is there any panoramic view as to Wallowin and Lake Charlevoix tonight, the higher elevation?
The secondary, yeah. What's also kind of unique about dead center of the map of the city property is the trees are so thinly spaced between each other. You can see a lot of the rolling terrain on ridges that you don't really get in avalanche or school forest trails. So there's a internal wooden panoramas that are pretty neat and unique to the area, but there is one that you can kind of see Lake Charlevoix from the top of the second here.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple things I think as we pursue this that are important for us to consider. The first one is the idea of single use on the property. I'm really leery about us on city property that there is this trail system and then these other things that are sort of, you could do sort of footnotes, you know, oh yeah, you can walk in there and so on. I think for us to be developing city property as park property, that being explicitly from the start, designing something that would accommodate other compatible uses, you know, whether it's the hiking, snowshoeing, and so on, as part of the plan, not just, yes, it's the single track bike system, and then out of the corners, yeah, you can walk on two if you really want to. It needs to be designed part of that. Maybe it's all compatible and just have one system. Or maybe as part of this, there's a walking trail, sort of like an avalanche. It sort of winds through it, everybody's happy. But it needs to be designed from the start. Part of our approval includes that multiple use aspect in service of our residents and our visitors as well. So that's the first thing, that we should avoid projects that are exclusively single use on parkland. The second thing is, we had the city goal for this a couple of years, and the parks goal really emphasized completing the stuff that we got going before we take on new things. And I think an element of that is our concern about having the long-term capacity to maintain the stuff that we built. And through partnerships that are wonderful, and I think it also is part of it is that the maintenance and long-term sustainability plan should be incorporated as part of the approval that we give. That may come in the form of memorandums of understanding in some form between all the parties. It could come along with a budget and a financing thing that identifies what the city's obligation would be in long term in addition to what our partners might be. If we have that in place, I think it becomes a little bit easier to reconcile with our concerns about being able to maintain the stuff we already have before starting on things. I think the timber harvesting thing, you know, we talked about from the ecological perspective that we have over time. A fewer number of big trees and harvesting can help achieve that and all that. But it also might provide an opportunity for us to, with the income that we might generate, if there's income generating capacity, we don't know yet, of being able to perhaps even dedicate that to a special fund that we can use for long-term maintenance and sustainability, so that all kind of that stuff sort of ties together. So those are the two things. Number one, we should avoid single-use plans. And secondly, that long-term sustainability and maintenance needs to be built into the proposal that we have.
Okay. Thank you.
That's my grant.
My question was pretty much the sustainability. No, if you get it done, or maintenance, I would say. No, none.
Very little.
Okay.
Do you see the possibility of making it a multiple use? I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, great question. So although I'm first and foremost a mountain biker, I do hike, snowshoe, and all these other things, I'm presenting this to you as a mountain biker, but just like School Forest Trail already is and Avalanche already is, it really, all these user groups, the majority of the user groups are compatible. So again, it's top of the desert, it's a mountain bike group, I'm a mountain biker. It's open to all or the majority of uses that are already compatible and being used at School Forest Trail and at Avalanche. So more, when we design trails, they're first and foremost sustainable, so you minimize water erosion or anything that would incur maintenance in the future. But it is biker optimized, so we design it in ways that bikers think is fun, which also allows snowshoers think is fun in the winter. We're also potentially, it'd be great to groom these also in the winter that we have in the School Forest Trail. There's also lots of two tracks that are already out there that are more hiker optimized. So hikers typically like to go from point A to point B and not zigzag like mountain bikers do. So the two tracks are already out there, really more of the point A to point B optimization that hikers like. So if you look at the existing hiking trails at Avalanche, they're really more in straight lines or curving around the property. The mountain bike optimized trails, while of course hikers and all the users can use them, they're more zigzaggy, if you will.
And from the Conservancy's point of view, it is also important that they're multi-use and that we're encouraging, all sorts and all abilities to the extent possible. So that's the point of view from which we would enter into an agreement with Tomba to help build trails there.
So do you think it's possible to design a hiking trail that would connect from, the new entry all the way to the school trail on Erickson Road? I mean, is that a possibility to consider as we're designing this?
Yeah, certainly. So all these trails are hikeable, right. And then there's a lot of existing two tracks on there that really already interconnect these properties that I think hikers would, lend themselves to. If that's an issue or something you need to further explore, I'm sure we can come to some kind of agreement, but why not? We're designing it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a great idea. It looks good, and what you've done with the School Forest property has been remarkable. And Avalanche has been good, not perfect, but good. And you're not asking the city for anything other than the use of the property, correct?
Correct.
So if this went down the tubes, all we've got is a bike trail there that's going to be grown over in a couple of years.
Yeah. Kind of going to one of Dean's questions is kind of what you just talked about as well too. There really wasn't any investment or staffing of resources from other city projects to develop this. Tomba and the Conservancy are basically looked to acquire the property and develop it under this system at their expenses. And one of the things we talked about earlier on, not with the commission, I don't recall, would be entering into some type of a memorandum of agreement with Tomba or the appropriate agencies, and the Conservancy or is appropriately involved, similar to what they have with the school property as well. They have an existing memorandum of agreement that basically spells out what their responsibilities are with regards to it. And I think you brought up an excellent point with regards to this looks really appealing. I think it has some really great potentials, at least I believe it does. But if it doesn't work out, we can, all our other options are still available to us. There isn't anything that you're doing to the site that's going to commit that it's always have to be trails forever. So if it flops or habits change 20 years down the road or something of that nature. Like you said, the trails will, nature will take its course, and at that point it makes sense to sell or do something different with it. Our successors can follow that up.
It seems like it would be important to do the inventory, though, with the Walloon Forester to just make sure we have that information before.
So we just had a stewardship committee meeting, and our consulting forester was there to talk about our plan and implementation steps. And it is a bit premature at this point for us to take the forester to the property. We don't own it yet. And basically what he'd like to do, we're going to go under contract with him probably early in 2019. And he'll start building the inventories and sort of the harvest plans for the properties that are in line now. And then, so once we're under a contract and once we have this sort of connecting piece purchased, then I think I'll be in a better position to bring him back down into this neck of the woods and get his feel for access and feasibility for forestry and that sort of thing.
Well, I'm in full support in response to questions being, not every asset that we have has to be multiple use, such as if you want to go swimming, you go to a beach, if you want to watch the sunset, you go to our parks and the lake, if you want to go ice skating, you go to Avalanche, if you want to go mountain biking, you go to this facility. So, and the other point to that is the mountain biking is the money revenue, the generating of economic development. I don't think there's an influx of hikers that are going to support the shoulder seasons and so on and so forth. So, but that can't be worked out. We can make this work. I'm excited wholeheartedly. This is, for all the reasons mentioned, we can make this work. So, I guess I'm looking for a motion, unless there's any further comments.
I don't know if I need a motion. If the commission wants to make one, fine. I think I'm picking up a consensus from the commission to continue to move forward with this, working through the park board, and then as we hit major milestones going forward, bring it back to the commission for further updates. But I'm not seeing any flashing red lights or yellow lights, maybe a flashing green go forward, but we have a lot of things to work through yet. The commission's comfortable with...
Well, so consensus, are we all on agreement that we want staff to move forward?
I do.
Yes.
Between all of us, we sort of articulated our enthusiasms and some things to think about as well. Yeah.
So, there you go. You got full consensus to move forward.
Okay. And we'll keep you up to date. Again, based on some of the recent information, it seemed timely to take this back to the park board and to the commission, and I'm sure there'll be future updates that'll be appropriate as well, too.
I just had one follow-up question for Michelle in the township.
Yes.
So the county said not to, the city would have to be the applicant on anything?
Because of the land ownership or the...
So if we were to do that, would we be competing against ourselves if we submitted other grant applications to the county for the rec money?
I would believe yes. Yeah. I mean, more applications you put in there,
right.
You're competing against that.
So would they approve something on the other property, other parts of the project? Or does it be a Lady Jolene Township have to own it?
We have to own it, as I understand.
I think the long-term plan of these properties, again, is that you mentioned the access that's also available on Erickson. Horton Bay is the other connecting piece on this. An additional stub that is coming with this property with the purple lines on it that goes to the north may disappear. They may not choose to retain that going forward. So I mean, we can look at different options for access with regards to it. And again, up to this point, with this information we're receiving about the grant, the idea was you guys figure it out and we're providing the land. And I still like to operate under that, we can do that.
Okay.
Good
job. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Everyone coming on that topic. Let's take a 5-minute break.